today is the last day in the series that we've called Carols, and each week we have been talking about a different Christmas carol. And see, carols are not just Christmas songs. So as Matt tried to put on a rendition of, like, I don't know what he was trying to sing last year or last week, All I Want for Christmas Is You or something like that. I don't know. I'm not going to sing for you today. But this isn't, carols are not Rudolph or Frosty or even the Grinch. Carols are religious folk songs or hymns that typically are associated with Christmas. But it's possible you could have Easter carols too. It's just not as prevalent as Christmas carols. So they celebrate, they remember, and they share the significance of the birth of Jesus. And songs play a pretty important role in expressing the good news of Jesus. That's why we have worship every week. Because there's something about when you put theology to music that you connect with it in a different way. And in Colossians 3:16, it says, "Let the message of Christ dwell among you richly as you teach and admonish one another with all wisdom through psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit, singing to God with gratitude in your hearts." So when we sing, we are engaging both our minds and our hearts, our emotions, in the worship of God. Many Christmas carols have a rich theological message, and some of them are pretty old. See, we grow accustomed, like most of us have grown up hearing, even if you didn't grow up in church, I'm sure that you grew up hearing a lot of Christmas carols because they're everywhere this time of year. And we grow so accustomed to the familiar lyrics that we can miss the deeper meaning of the message in the songs. So each week we've looked at a different Christmas carol to see how its message points to the joy, peace, and hope that we find in Jesus. So does anyone remember the first one we talked about? Joy to the World. What was last week? Oh, Little Town of Bethlehem. So if you've missed those, then go back and listen to them, because there are things that, as we started digging into these songs, there's things about it that I did not realize that are just pretty stinking cool. So our song for today is O Come, Emmanuel. Does anyone like that one? I've heard a lot of people recently say that that's like one of their favorites. And I see you. That is one of their favorite Christmas carols. And I was just telling Laura, like, A Holy Night is like my favorite. It's always been my favorite. I love the simplicity. I love the, it's complex musically. But I love the lyrics of that song. But O Come, Emmanuel is always just like right there, just like trying to bump it out of first place. Do you guys ever like rank things and then they like, you have to argue with yourself? About, okay, good. I'm not the only one with voices in my head. Okay. So, well, that's how you argue. Okay, never mind. Anyways, so O Come, Emmanuel is a really fascinating hymn. It was originally written in Latin in the ninth century. That's old. Like, this is pre-Reformation. This is pre-Protestantism. It was used originally by the Catholic Church during Advent. It was a prayer that they would sing. This song has been sung by believers for over 1,200 years. I doubt that there are many songs still around that were sung 1,200 years ago. It's a long time, guys. I was blown away when I saw that because I knew it was old. But I was like, oh, yeah, it's at least 200 years old. Yeah. So when we sing this song, we are joining in camaraderie with the timeless universal family of God. It has a deep theological roots that have stood the test of time. And it's been translated into different languages. It's been modified over the years. But it still has so much to teach us. Shauna, would you like to hand out? So I'm going to go ahead and tell you guys, there were so many scriptures for today that I printed them out for you. So you could follow along. And also, because of the kind of the way that this song is in the scriptures, I wanted you guys to have this reference to take home with you and look at later on, because it's really fascinating. So this song helps root us in the Old Testament in a way that is focused on the coming of Jesus. See, the Old Testament is not just a historical record of the nation of Israel. It goes beyond that. It's God's plan to prepare for the coming of Jesus. So it's a way for us to see the hope of Jesus through the promises and prophecies that predicted his coming. So what we're going to do is we're not going to hit every single verse because there are 7 verses. And I'm sure most of you have heard 2 or 3 of them. There's some of them that are kind of buried in time, but they're all so good, and we couldn't leave any of them out. Micah is so happy that we're doing all 7 verses. So there are, each verse references a prophecy in Isaiah. So we're going to kind of go through, and we'll go through a couple of these, but then I'm going to let you guys just kind of go through the rest of them on your own. Faith, I'm very sorry. I know all the slides are in there. I'm not using them all, and I'm skipping around. So, but it's okay because everybody has the reference in front of them. So if you get lost on the screen, it's okay. All right, so the first verse, O come, O come, Emmanuel, and ransom captive Israel, that mourns in lonely exile here until the Son of God appear. This verse talks about the hope in the time of exile. And it references Isaiah 7:14. It says, therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will come and conceive and give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel. So that's the reference, the prophecy, looking forward to when the Son of God was going to come. But then it's fulfilled. There's a message that the angel gives to Joseph before the birth of Jesus. And it says, all this took place to fulfill what the Lord has said through the prophet, the virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel, which means, kids, Emmanuel, which means, kids, Emmanuel, which means God with us. Got it? Okay. I know there's distracting music at the exact same time, so none of them heard it, Chris. None of them. I saw like 2 sets of eyes here. Okay. All right. So the way that this, and that kind of sets up how this works. So there's the verse, and then we have the prophecy in Isaiah, and then we have where it's fulfilled in the New Testament by Jesus. The second verse, O come, O branch of Jesse's stem, unto your own and rescue them. From depths of hell your people save and give them victory over the grave. And this references a couple prophecies in Isaiah. A shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse, from his roots. A branch will bear fruit. And also, in that day, the root of Jesse will stand as a banner for the peoples. The nation will rally to him, and his resting place will be glorious. Now, these prophecies, they point to a future king from the family of David. So Jesse is the father of David. So root of Jesse, also line of David. And this future king will restore Israel and enlighten the nations. Not just the family of Israel, but the nations. So it references both Jesus' victory over sin, Satan, and death, but it also references the inclusion of the Gentiles into God's promises to Israel. And then we see this fulfilled in Luke 1:32-33. It says, he will be a great, and he will be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over Jacob's descendants forever. His kingdom will never end. So we see how this is kind of lining up, right? And we're not going to go through every single verse of the song because I want you guys to kind of take this home and kind of look over it yourself too. But there's a couple more that I kind of want to reference. And I'm not going to read all the scriptures to you because it gets to be a little bit much. But let's skip ahead to verse... let's skip ahead to the last verse. And this is probably one of my favorites. They're all good. You can read it later. So it says, O come, O King of nations, bind in one the hearts of all mankind. Bid all our sad divisions cease, and be yourself our King of peace. This is referencing the prophecy in Isaiah that says, many peoples will come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the temple of God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways so that we may walk in his paths. The law will go out from Zion, the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He will judge between the nations and will settle disputes for many peoples. They will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not take up sword against nation, nor will they train for war anymore. Come, descendants of Jacob, let us walk in the light of the Lord. So we're not a farming society for the most part. I mean, there's gardening and there's homesteading. But most of all, most people aren't farmers now. And so we can kind of miss a little bit about this because it's talking about the weapons of war, the swords and the spears that they used against the nations in their own self-defense. But when Jesus comes, it's saying here that they will beat their swords into plowshares to cultivate, to grow, and their spears into pruning hooks. It changes their purpose. It changes their focus. It changes the way that they do life. No longer are they soldiers, but now they are families. They're farmers. They're growing. They're cultivating. They're settling roots in. And this comes to fruition in Romans 15. And Paul is telling us to accept one another then, just as Christ accepted you, in order to bring praise to God. For I tell you that Christ has become a servant of the Jews on behalf of God's truth, so that the promises made to the patriarchs... Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. The promises made to the patriarchs might be confirmed, and moreover, that the Gentiles might glorify God for his mercy. As it is written, therefore I will praise you among the Gentiles. I will sing the praises of your name. There's shifting here. This little verse at the end that is usually cut out when you hear it around on the radio and stuff, is talking about the movement from war to peace and how the birth of Jesus, the coming of Jesus, brings peace to all the nations. So take those home, look through them, dig a little deeper. I was tight on spatial. Notice I had to change the margins and because I wanted to fit it on one page for you guys. But every single one of those verses needs to be put into context. So don't just read those. Open your Bible and read within context of where it is. And it's going to make you see not just this carol, but the message of this carol in a new light. It's beautiful stuff. So this carol it's a prayer of longing for both the first and second coming of Jesus. So you might say, well, why do we sing a carol about prophecies that have been fulfilled in the birth of Jesus? It would be easy to think this is just a song of remembrance, of celebrating a moment that has passed. But it is still very relevant to us today, because the birth of Jesus was only the beginning. See, his birth it gives us hope for a reconciled future. See, the joy is great, but we are still living as exiles in a broken world. See, death still snatches away. Disease still makes us miserable. Calamity still strikes. Satan still prowls. Flesh is still warring against the spirit. And we all still long for Jesus to come to deliver us. We're longing for that second coming. See, the Christian life is one that is constantly oscillating between two extremes. You have on one end, you have overflowing joy and hope of the already redeemed. But then on the other side, you have the tearful yearning for all of humanity to be reconciled, for this broken world to find wholeness, to find that shalom, that peace. 2 Corinthians, I like the way that it's worded in 2 Corinthians 6:10. It says that we are sorrowful, yet always rejoicing. See, it's good to have Christmas carols that capture the liminal tension of Christian life. There's that constant friction, that tension, and it's uncomfortable. But see, we have songs like Joy to the World that is a celebration of the moment. It remembers the moment of the birth, and it celebrates it with all of the heavenly hosts. And then we have songs like Little Town of Bethlehem, which is a remembrance of the time, and it's relevant for today because it's so easy for us to miss Jesus is here. It's easy for us to miss what's happening in the spiritual realm because we get so wrapped up in what we're doing, and he comes silently, oh silently. But then we have O Come, O Come, Emmanuel. And it is a prayer of longing. Yes, we remember the first coming, but we're still longing for that second coming. We can celebrate and mourn together. And that's hard. It's hard to think because those are two powerful extremes and it feels like they're clashing together. And so as we listen to O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, I know that one thing that's always drawn me to it is just the old sound of it. It sounds like it deserves to be sung in a monastery, with the echoing walls and the marble floors, because it has that feeling to it. And it has that comfort of Christmas kind of feeling to it when you think about like the meaning of Emmanuel, which means God with us. When you think about that, it brings comfort knowing that God is with us. But see, this song serves more of a purpose than even that, because it reminds us of all these prophecies. And these are just prophecies in one book of the Bible, in Isaiah. It reminds us that God was speaking even when it felt silent, and that he was reminding his people that he was going to come back and stay. And he did it. Because we can flip forward and we can find where that prophecy was fulfilled, where that promise came true in the person of Jesus. So we can find comfort in knowing that the same God that did all these things is still working, is still moving today. See, as we move toward Christmas, most people are going to experience some kind of a mixture of sadness and excitement. See, carols like O Come, Emmanuel, they give us a space to sit and not only celebrate the hope that we have through the birth of Jesus, but to long for a world, a time, a place when everyone will be reconciled to God and there will be no brokenness, there will be no death, there will be no pain, no fear, no sickness. So I wasn't actually sure how I was going to close out today, and I just kept thinking, it'll come, it'll come, it'll come. It didn't come, and then it came. After worship practice today, Mike came up, and if you don't know Mike well, when he gets a certain look on his face, you know he's got something good. And he said, read this. And so I'm going to read this because Mike told me to. It says, the empty places at Christmas can nearly tear your heart out, can't they? Sometimes it's easier not to celebrate at all than to do it with a shattered heart. Our house is almost ready for Christmas. The nativity scene is carefully arranged, and the kitchen is covered in greenery, twinkling lights, and red berries. Candles and glistening glass grace our dining room table, but there's a big empty space in our living room between the couch and the chair. It's where our Christmas tree will stand. From the time they were toddlers to teenagers, my sons have helped me decorate the tree. Now that they're college age, they ask me to wait until everyone is home so we can decorate the tree together. This year, our tree will be up 10 days before Christmas. I'm more than happy to wait since it means even more special Christmas moments. But that empty space gives me pause, because it reminds me of how all the empty places are magnified at Christmas. The empty chair at the table when a loved one has passed. The broken circle around the tree when a prodigal refuses to come home. The bare finger after the vows are broken and the ring is taken off for the last time. On and on the list goes. All the empty, broken things. The broken things can sometimes be ignored or shoved down at other times of the year. But at Christmas, they claw their way to the top of the mind and heart, overwhelming and suffocating. What comfort is there in these empty places? In a word, Jesus. He comes to sit with us in the dark, in the empty spaces, in the brokenness of our hearts. I've cried my share of tears at Christmas, and I can tell you this with all certainty. Jesus never, ever left me alone. He wrapped me in his loving arms, comforting me with his presence and love. If you're facing a shattered Christmas this year, a Christmas with an empty place that is breaking your heart, my prayer for you is the same, that in your lonely, empty place, you will experience the peace and love of Jesus as you never have before. The Lord is nigh unto them that are of broken heart, and saveth such as to be contrite in spirit. Psalms 34:18. We're going to do the song, O Come, Emmanuel. And it's going to sound just a little bit different. Y'all come up. That was your cue. Come on. I'm not doing it alone. Thank you. But I wanted to wait until the end because I don't want you to miss the significance of the song, the significance of the verses. And maybe even just hold that sheet. And if you don't want to sing along, if you'd rather read along, then you can do that. You can look at the prophecies. You can look at the scriptures and think about what they mean. But do it with this in mind. This song is a call and response. The verses are sorrowful. They make you reflect. They make you think. Of the sadness. They have that feeling of somber stillness. But everyone is answered with the refrain, rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel has come to ransom captive Israel.